Okay, welcome into another exciting episode of That's
So Cincinnati.
Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Phil, Silent Phil. Silent Phil, our executive producer. Here we are, back for another riveting episode. Greg Landsman, Cincinnati City Councilman, is our special guest today. Sherry, you excited about having him on?
Well, you know, honestly, he's really been in the news. We try and have guests that, you know, are newsmakers right away, like in the moment. And he is fresh off a big city council initiative, eviction prevention. This is his first term on council, and he was fresh off of Preschool Promise, which is already has some early metrics that it's a success in this city. And so I think he's going to have a really good story to tell today.
And stick around because Greg, I believe, is going to break some news on the banks project. So looking forward to talking to him about that.
That's what happens when you chat beforehand.
That's what happens when you listen to That's
So Cincinnati.
Before we jump to Greg, let's talk about, we have a new arena, Sherry. For an arena. Heritage Bank Center. Heritage Bank Center was announced this week to replace U.S. Bank Arena, formerly also known as First Star Center, The Crown, and Riverfront Coliseum in its 44-year history. It was it opened 2 months after I was born, 1975, September. And here we are. What, fifth name? Your thoughts?
It's as creaky as you are.
You know what I think? You know what comes to mind when I think of this? Lipstick on a pig.
The underlying problems absolutely remain. You know what, though? God love them. They really put on a dog and pony show yesterday. And I didn't think that they were going to have new naming rights, right? Like, I was kind of like, well, who would put their name on this arena that's pretty troubled? It is our biggest concert
troubled,
venue.
Is it trouble or is it just, it's just old and it's
old
outdated.
And shabby.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems to be ran okay, right? I mean.
Absolutely. But we're missing a lot of the big acts.
Yes.
And, you know, like these big sporting events, because they're just looking for things that our arena does not have. We missed, you know, hosting the Republican convention. I mean, I honestly thought we were contenders, but
we were pretenders.
Now I really understand that arena, that was a problem, as was our convention hotel. So that's being fixed. And I have to wonder, like, is this the precursor, like a new name? Is the precursor to actually fixing it?
Goodness, I hope so. We spend our time wringing our hands on so many other things. We're now going to have, and whatever, we've gone over it hundreds of times, we're now going to have two outdoor music venues within walking distance of each other on both of our, you know, the Kentucky Riverbank and the Ohio Riverbank. And, okay, so be it. The private sector on both sides decided to invest millions and millions of dollars. So be it. But at what point are our leaders going to really hunker down and address this new building a new arena or completely overhauling? I don't think you can overhaul the one that we have. I think you've got to build a new one. It's so outdated. The amount of money it's going to take to, you know, renovate that place. Again, I think of lipstick on a pig. I think we need an entirely new arena.
And people's expectations.
And people's expectations. Part of the problem, Sherry, is that our arena currently is privately owned. I mean, that's part of the problem in terms of getting a new arena. In terms of taxpayer dollars, certainly that's probably a good thing that a private business owns the arena. But it's not helping in getting a new one.
Major tenant, the Cyclones are the tenant. They're a major, you know, money making tenant. It's been a struggle for them. There was, you know, a plan floated for some public input, and that didn't go anywhere because we were still, you know, twinkling our eye about a lot of these other projects at that time. And so now there's so much momentum. Like, I can't remember a time like this since I've been here, honestly, with so many projects getting off the ground at one time.
In spite of ourselves, there's so much momentum, you know?
Yes,
In spite of all the fighting, the city, the county, some business community, I mean,
I went to a zoning meeting last week where there was an argument. Like, yes, yep. In spite of ourselves.
So,
but they're getting it done. And so this is the next thing on the horizon for sure.
Let me correct you there. We hope it's the next thing on the horizon in terms of you know, kind of downtown types of projects. I've not really heard any serious discussions, though, in the political realm and in the business community where I, you know, you and I both have contacts about any serious efforts in any of those worlds to try to move forward and get push on a new arena.
But the thing about it is, though, if you look at it, like with so much momentum down there, like there's a new hotel and like around Lytle Park and all of these things that are coming. Is that what they want, casting a shadow over these amazing projects that are coming? I have to think the answer is no, and people have to be thinking about this. And also, I have heard, you know, that there are some very serious issues that have to be addressed about, you know, things like roofs and walls and things like that. And that seems like a good time to have a discussion.
Well, it'll be interesting to see in terms of when you think about, like you said, Sherry, you mentioned the convention hotel that's moving along, the Banks music venue and what's going on down there, the FC Cincinnati Stadium and the development going on around there.
They're redoing the casino. The casino is going to be a Hard Rock
Cafe. Yep. And aren't they talking about also a an outdoor music venue there as well?
Yes. I mean, there's always been a space for it. It's very small compared to these other two things that are coming and being built. But there is an outdoor lawn for that. And, you know, it never has really lived up to its potential with the past two owners.
I'll tell you, I mean, these are certainly make for, you know, great copy and things to write about and follow. But at some point, the focus, I feel like, has got to start to get focused on some of these more real world issues, real issues that affect our city. And certainly, and I know everybody else, you say poverty, but it's real. And with that, I think it segues us into bringing in Greg Landsman, who one of the things that he has worked on, I think you mentioned, is that working on, you know, folks who are getting evicted and trying to help those people not get evicted and dealing with, you know, really crappy apartments and, you know, dealing with slumlords, out-of-town slumlords. So he's really addressing that, and you had a nice story on that last week. And
which, thanks for everyone for reading that. That story did really well. And you don't always know when you're writing about poverty, like, what kind of traction it's going to get, and it was such a telling thing to me.
Are we ready to jump and bring Greg in?
Absolutely.
Special guest time here on the TSC. Love to welcome in Cincinnati City Councilman, always wearing his blue puffy coat.
Love
puffy
my coat.
Jacket. You will recognize him by that just alone, but we also know him as Greg Landsman. Greg, welcome onto the hot seat.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, of course.
You're in a puffy coat too. I feel like I should note.
Love the puffy coats from LL Bean and wherever.
You got to be comfortable, you know?
Really? I feel like you have to wear high heels every day, but okay. Works for me.
I think that's fair. Touche.
If it's November, Greg Landsman is wearing the blue puffy coat.
November, December, January, February, March, a little bit of April. So
there is an I Love Voting sticker on his coat today, too.
I do love voting. I voted today, and a lot of people vote early, which is great, and I'm glad people have the opportunity to vote early. I like the tradition. I like going into my polling location and seeing, you know, my neighbors and grabbing a ballot and going to the little booth and filling out my ballot. And
it was a very November election day today. Every once in a while, you get a nice, sunny, crisp day, but it was pouring down rain. Yeah. Those people, you know what? God bless the people who make the system work, both sides, like, not saying, like, I mean, they were out there with their umbrellas passing out ballots, you know, asking you to vote for their candidates. That's not any different, rain or shine.
Yeah, and I like seeing that. I mean, it is democracy. I'd say at its best, the challenge is that voter turnout is so low these days, and it's really problematic. I mean, it's just that the numbers continue to decline. I'm assuming, based on what I've heard, that this is going to be another very low turnout year. And part of that, I think, is that we aren't putting enough on people's ballots that they care deeply about. If they care deeply about something, they show up. and that's on us.
Let's jump to some city issues. Certainly, it is an election year, but
Where do we start?
Where do we even start? I mean, there's been a lot of things going on at City Hall and in the city, and it's funny because one of the things that I really kind of forgot about the 2019 election, and one of the reasons why was because of this banks issue has sucked up a lot of energy and a lot of time. And you know, I know that came back around last week, and what's the latest on that from just that you can tell us from your standpoint?
So the banks, for you know, people playing catch up here, there's you know, we've done a good job, I think, as a region developing everything between the Red Stadium and the Freedom Center. And now we're trying to get everything done between the Freedom Center and Paul Brown Stadium. The challenge is that there's a height height restriction in the Bengals contract, and so developing over there has been much more difficult. But we were able to get a deal done on the music venue to go on lot 27, and there'll be a park associated with that. And this will be a pretty big music venue, and that'll bring a lot of people to the banks. We stood our ground on saying, look, you know, we want to see this happen, but moving Hilltop to the west side, whether that's Queensgate or Lower Price Hill, is not an option. The community clearly rejected that. And so they had to go back to the drawing board, and fortunately they were able to resolve it very quickly. And now the question is, how do we move forward on all of the other parcels? Because, you know, there's a lot of land left to develop down there, and we owe it to the tenants down there and the people who've invested in their businesses and to the city in terms of having a really exciting riverfront. So the latest, as I understand it, is that Todd Portoon, God bless him, has stepped up once again and had the mayor over to his house over the weekend, which is amazing. And
Mayor John Cranley was over at Todd Portoon's house.
Yeah, over the weekend, as I understand. Over the weekend, on Saturday. And, you know, because he...
This is actually a stunning development in the idea. I mean, I haven't heard that yet, by the way, so far this week. So they have kind of kept that to themselves. But... We just saw Todd was very upset last Thursday.
And very sick as well.
There was a big surprise, you know, zoning revelation that came out of like where things should be zoned and like a new path going forward kind of presented on Wednesday night. And, you know, Todd was very upset at commissioners and he just was begging the mayor to end this war.
I think his quote was something. Yeah, it was like, for Cranley to stop this declaration of war.
And so, anyway, this is stunning, the fact that this happened.
So they meet, do you know what's come out of that or what?
Just real quick, back up. I mean, if you remember when he announced that he was going to retire a couple months ago, he said, look, I still have a lot of work to do. And he wasn't kidding. I mean, you know, he really wants to get this done.
And the hotel, the banks,
And you know, he's still going through chemo and battling for his life literally. Absolutely. Every day. He and the mayor and others came together over the weekend, as I understand it, and began to put together a framework for moving forward that will allow us to develop on all of the key lots down there. So whether it's 1 or 13, I know this is confusing to folks, but the city owns 1 and 13. Those are lots that are, again, next to the Bengals Stadium that we'll be able to move forward on 24, that the Bengals or the county will be able to still we'll do all those things and still be able to meet its requirement in terms of the 3,200 parking spaces.
Because until this moment, and this has been the biggest sticking point on the deal, the county and the city, of course, are not getting along on how this should be, because the county cut a deal with the Bengals, which they, you know, having to do with their lease, and they didn't feel like they needed to tell the city, but it did affect the city because they promised these 3,200 surface lots on places that are the developable lots to the stadium. And that is where really the sticking point kind of all of this stems from
And
so this sounds like a real resolution.
I got to give credit to the administration for saying, look, we got to protect our interests. You know, we owe it to city taxpayers and we got to move forward with the music venue, but do it in a way that allows us to get all these other things done. And they stood their ground. And I also have to give credit to the mayor who said, let's work through this. And then, of course, to Todd Portoon, who I think as this unfolds, people will realize, I mean, he really is a giant of a person, and decided, you know, look, I'm going to get this done. And I think he's got a deal, in the works with the mayor and with, Commissioner Driehaus and others.
I'm going to have to go now and start making calls. So no, just kidding.
But let me make sure.
I mean, he's breaking news right here.
Let me make sure the reworked lease that the county did with the Bengals, part of that, and I know this was definitely a big concern for Mayor Cranley, was that the Bengals gained control over more surface lots that essentially said, like, and they basically made those surface lots into forever, and those lots could not be developed on. But what you're saying, Greg, is that now everybody's gone back and come together, and now there's going to be the opportunity to develop on those surface lots. So now we're not looking at being stuck with massive tailgating lots, what I think I've called it, Walmart-sized parking lots on our riverbank for the rest of time, correct?
I believe that as it relates to 24 and 1 and 13, the vast majority of the space down there, yep.
Yeah.
You're correct. I mean, I don't have the details. I do know that they have worked through a framework that allows for us to, the city and the county, to work together to develop really across the board down there. And it's a big win, I think, for the city and the county and for taxpayers.
How are you? So go ahead, Cherry.
Well, it does sound like the Hilltop deal is still very much in play, though, because, I mean, to be fair, tailgating is part of, you know, the Bengals experience.
And location for Hilltop.
If we're going to have a team, we should have the, you know, that's a fun part of it.
But part of this is,
so it feels like that's where the tailgating parking would still be.
Hilltop was already going to get resolved by the county finding another location. It's just we can't, in good conscience, put it in Lower Price Hill or in Queens Gate, places that, you know, folks said no. I mean,
so
we
still
have a
don't know where they're moving.
Of people,
but it's not going to be. We don't know where they're moving, but it's not going to be Lower Price Hill. That's not part of the reworking here.
Yeah.
How do you overall? How do you, as a councilman who's been very involved in meeting? I know you worked hard on this for several months, meeting with a lot of people, and knowing that you're a guy who tries to bring people together, and this was causing a lot of hand-wringing. And I think that there are a lot of hurt feelings involved here that are probably going to, it's probably going to take a long time to mend fences. How do you feel about this rework thing and how it is?
I feel really hopeful. You know, I mean, it could fall apart, and again, I don't know all the details, but I do know that, you know, the mayor and Commissioner Portune and Driehaus and others and the two administrations are working together, and they're sorting through the issues, and that is a good thing. I mean, I think part of it was just getting them to sit down and appreciate the fact that at the end of the day, we're all in this together. We really are. And I think Todd Portune has cemented or will have cemented his legacy as just being a force. And when he, leans into something, it gets done. I mean, he really is amazing.
Let me ask you this too. Part of the conversation here has been how the bank's development as a whole is being done, who's involved. Do you want to, you know, there's been issues of secrecy and the bank's joint steering committee not meeting a whole lot, yet a lot of decisions being made. Do you want to see changes made to how decisions are made on that development?
Yeah, I think the bank steering committee and Bob Castellini, the owner of the Reds in particular, deserves a lot of credit for as far for getting as far down the road as we've gotten. I mean, he really did bring a lot of people together early on when they weren't working together.
Mm-hmm. It was great in the beginning.
And Mayor Mallory and John Cranley and others came together to get something big done. David
Cranley
Pepper, Councilman Cranley,
Commissioner Pepper. Portune, yep.
I think now it's at the point where, depending on how things shake out, we've, you know, we've got to just move forward and get this stuff developed together with the county, and transparency and doing this, you know, above board and with elected officials is absolutely something that has to happen moving forward. So, yes.
So you want to see the bank steering committee stay input? Do you want new members? Do you want it to be dissolved? Like what?
I don't know, city and county really need to get together and figure that out.
That
to me is the most important thing. What happens to the bank's steering committee is secondary to the city and the county and the elected officials and the administration working directly with each other. I mean, that's what people voted for these folks to work together. And I think what will end up happening here is that when they started to work together and there weren't these intermediaries, they got things done.
This is county-owned land in the city. It's a city-county partnership. That's the way it was set up from the get-go. Obviously, I know that the city along the way has pulled out a lot of funds and has become more county-focused. And I've raised concerns about this in columns about how the county's attorney on the banks, Tom Gableman, has really run with this and kind of, it appears, has tried to make a lot of decisions without maybe the greater good of the city and the county involved. What's your take on that?
To be fair, he is taking direction from the commissioners.
Or is he?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a really good question, and Tom has, from my standpoint, been leading a lot of this, and when Todd and the mayor sat down and started talking through this, and same with Commissioner Driehaus, and I believe Commissioner Dumas as well. I think they started to make a lot of headway, and you know, it is important for us to keep in mind that at the end of the day, the people responsible are those who are elected and or who are on the payrolls here. And the key is for people to work together and get these things done.
I want to point out something that I've been thinking about, and that's why I do feel like people listen to our That's So Cincinnati podcast to kind of get what we're thinking and where we go with interviews. Thank you for breaking some news today. I think about going back in time. Carter, for some reason, left this project. It came at a pivotal moment.
Carter was the original developer.
Right.
Original master
they
developer,
left
yep.
when there was an argument about whether Promo West should be the person who's going to do the music venue or it should be the symphony. And they kind of left, I feel like, in the dark of night, because that was just like, here's a press release. They're not the developer anymore.
And gone.
So, to me, it's like that was a pivotal moment. It's like, do you get another developer? That seems like a best practice to me. And, you know, it just kind of whizzed by with not a lot of things. And that's where now we have Tom Gableman leading what's happening down there and like kind of really presenting this music venue. So anyway, that's kind of just, that's where I'm thinking about. We have been covering this a long time. And
well,
to me, that's the moment.
And I think that's right. And so what I think what you're seeing is those elected officials who feel responsible for things like this, even though, I mean, as you all know, I'm most passionate about children and families and how we grow this economy and neighborhoods, strengthen neighborhoods in a way that lifts up all of our kids and makes Cincinnati a wonderful place for families, all families. And so that's what I focus on. However, when these things come up, I do believe it is my responsibility to play whatever productive role I can play. And so far, that's been listening to both sides, trying to understand where the overlaps are, and who needs to be talking to who in order to get something done. And, you know, I've tried my best to do that and have kept in the in close contact with everyone. And at the end of the day, the mayor and Commissioner Portune and Driehaus, really because of Todd Portune's leadership, said, you know, look, time is running out on us sorting through this in a way that works for everyone. And, you know, he said, look, you know, come to my house. Let's get this done.
I have one more question.
Oh, no. I do want to, you know, you ask your question. I'll ask mine offline. I do want to talk about some of the work that he's done here. You know, we're into Preschool Promise. He worked on this eviction prevention stuff.
I just have one more Banks question.
Do it, because you know it's going to be a good one. It's Jason.
I want us to talk. We had Commissioner Driehaus sitting in that very seat, I don't know, 4 or 5 episodes ago. And she said she would like to see a master developer. I'm paraphrasing, but would like to see a master developer hired. Would you like to see that as well? Do you think that will help solve some of the issues that we've seen here in the past several months?
Maybe. I'm certainly open to it. I don't want to minimize anything that that, you know, the Reds and the Castellinis have done, because we wouldn't be here if it weren't for their leadership. And they've obviously done an enormous amount in terms of the current Banks working group. But yeah, I think moving forward, based on what comes out of this framework, or this new agreement that everyone seems to feel good about, I suspect we'll need some additional help. But whatever gets the job done, you know what I mean? I mean, at this point, we can't, and I don't think voters want us to, you know, spend a whole lot of time worrying about what has been and what's in place now. I think they expect us to do what they do, which is, you know, what's it going to take to get it done? We'll do that.
Yep.
I do think that Jason has definitive opinions about how it's gone so far. I'll refer everyone to his PX columns.
But you know, look,
I'm totally with you. I'd like to see the city and the county
correct.
Put their differences aside. This is a real opportunity, Greg.
Yeah.
And I know you and I have talked about this, and there's a real opportunity here to put some of these, especially now with Democrats in control of the county commission and also of the council and the mayor's office, is to come together and really sort of set a new day.
Yeah, that's
right. Put behind all the pettiness.
Can we say
of
new
decades.
Day? Are we allowed to say new day? Or are we banning that?
Oh, because of the Bengals?
Yeah.
But put it aside, come together. I mean, my take is blow up that steering committee and get the council and the commissioners to take back control of that project, get a master developer in there who has national expertise, who this is what these guys and ladies do, and let's move forward and let's get that thing done after, 11 years here of starts and fits and fights and... Just let's move on.
Yeah, and I think part of it is important because we need all of downtown and over the Rhine to be growing and bringing in people and businesses and so on and so forth. We also have to, you know, be getting similar things done, similar in the sense that they're big and important and they have impact in our neighborhoods. And so
definitely.
You know, it will be nice to have this behind us so that the work that we're doing in neighborhoods is back front and center.
And that gets to the stuff that you've been working on, things that aren't, you know, glamorous headline, you know, big stadiums and riverfront developments. I think we're focusing, I'm just saying collectively, folks tend to focus way too much on that stuff. But you here in the last, it came out, a couple weeks ago, last week, Story had a great Sherry on it. Sherry had a great story on it about the work you've done with folks getting evicted. Can you talk about that and
I'm going to give you one more setup line.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I feel like council has they've done some individual things, Tobacco 21, fair wages. But I feel like this is the biggest, most comprehensive thing that this council has done as a whole, and you did take the lead on it since they really took office. And I think it was just stunning, like just corralling all of these entities and organizations to really make some headway on eviction prevention. Anyway, I mean, I really saw it as that, this Thanks. First big thing.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. And
that.
It's also as you following through, I remember if you said it once, I heard you say it 1,000 times on the campaign back in 2017. Yeah. Look, my focus is on children and families. You have a history of doing that and the work that you've done with Preschool Promise and education,
right.
The stuff that you did in Governor Ted Strickland's office. and here you are now. This is a huge accomplishment for you. And tell us about that.
Yeah. So both of you, thank you. That was very kind. And
Oh, Mike, I see him. Yeah. And guess what? So does Jason.
Yeah. I think economies that are really growing and in a sustainable way are the economies that invest in people and infrastructure. I mean, you know, and so that is one of the reasons why I'm so focused on children and families, and particularly our young people. You invest in those folks, and the infrastructure. You will have a much more robust, much more diverse economy, and that's important in terms of whether or not Cincinnati is growing, and growing in a way that includes everyone. So one of the biggest issues that we face is housing and access to quality, affordable housing. And at the heart of that issue is whether or not people can afford to stay in their homes, and or even if they can't afford to stay in their homes, they're able to stay in their homes because they weren't evicted in a way that would have been preventable. So we, a year ago, got all of the folks on both sides of the issue together, and they started to organize and identify policies that would dramatically reduce preventable evictions in the city of Cincinnati. So folks from, the Apartment Association to the Homeless Coalition, I mean, the entire spectrum working together over the course of 12 to 14 months. And what came out of it was 8 pieces of legislation. And we passed all 8 last week, combined with the eviction prevention fund that we set up, which is already helping hundreds of families and children stay in their homes, I think will dramatically reduce preventable evictions. And it's important to say preventable evictions because everyone knows that there are some people who have caused damage to a property or done any number of other things, and they should be evicted. It's unfortunate, but it's not something that we really can do a whole lot about. But most of these evictions are preventable, meaning if we can get in front of them, help someone get through an emergency, be able to pay their rent, and if it's not a rent-related thing. So for example, last night I was at Colonial Village, which is a piece of property in Avondale, which is one of the pilot areas in this rental inspection pilot that we passed last week. Mm-hmm. And, this has been going on for, we are only focused on those properties that have been out of compliance in a very serious way for over 12 months. So over a year, they've not fixed it, right? And people are in danger. So this is from last night. They literally... I'm reading, these are the units. So carpet damage and mold from a water heater leak, mold, roaches, tub fixtures not functioning, mold and water damage, kitchen floor and carpet rotten, roaches, mold, roaches.
This is a landlord who is evicting people from apartments, and this is the condition that they're in. So these are city codes we're talking about here.
And they're paying rent. He's, this is a landlord. And again,
By the way, what you just said there, that was multiple properties, right? That wasn't just in one place. Right?
It's something like 45 units, most of which have mold, roaches, major sewer backups. And even though people are paying, because they're complaining about these issues, which are serious safety health issues, there are these evictions that are being pursued on innocent people.
And we have an owner. Well, Craig and I were talking about this before. I'm probably going to write a story about it. I mean, we've seen these pop up from time to time in the city, and we do typically write about them. We have an owner who lives in Atlanta, a property manager who lives in Detroit. Imagine, fine, if you want it like that, you do need to take care of it. But imagine if you're trying to deal with these issues and you're dealing with someone who lives in Detroit.
Yeah. And so
central slumlord right there.
So almost all of these properties that we're focused on in the rental inspection pilot are owned by somebody outside of Cincinnati. Cincinnati's don't do this to them, their own. I mean, and maybe this is true for all cities, but I feel like there's a little bit more here in terms of people taking care of each other in Cincinnati, and so you don't see this often from Cincinnati landlords. Our landlords do a pretty good job. It's out of state landlords who see these properties as money makers, and they're not taking care of them, and that has to change. And so
this is what you're doing is holding those folks accountable, and they that's part of the thing is that they want to own properties in other cities far away and skirt the accountability.
Correct.
And that's what you're doing here. You're saying, nope, yep, enough of
that's
that.
That's right. And so, there were seven other pieces of legislation that we passed, including one that just creates a registry allowing us to have contact information for all of our landlords and property managers so that we can communicate more effectively. Because at the end of the day, that's a big part of solving problems is being able to talk to each other. And we haven't done that.
So, I did write a lot about this. We're going to track it too. I think this is going to be a big issue in the city going forward. This isn't like a one and done. I mean, I think we're going to be talking a lot about this housing trust fund.
Yeah, let me add to that point. There's a couple things. One is, we put this working group together for a year in order to get the policy right. We are building a new working group to make sure that it's all executed effectively, which I don't think has been done before, meaning that typically when you pass something, you give it to the administration and you say, okay, we passed it. Our job is done. Go implement it. And this is obviously too important to get wrong or not exactly right. So we are working with the administration to pull together a working group, again, of folks on both sides to make sure we execute every piece of policy exactly the way it was supposed to and minimize or eliminate any unintended consequences. But as Sherry is pointing out, in addition to executing this work effectively, which is what's going to keep people in their homes, we still have an issue where most of these tenants, almost all of them, they don't have any legal representation. So we're not providing the kind of legal support they need when they do find themselves facing an eviction. We're going to try to reduce as many as we possibly can, but that legal representation matters. And then being able to subsidize the construction of new housing in the city of Cincinnati so that it's affordable for low-income families and working families is going to be very, very important. The cities that win are going to be the cities that do any number of things, but one of those big things is being able to provide housing that people can afford. And it's not just low-income housing, although that's really important. It is. If you're a nurse or you're a bus driver or you're a police officer, a firefighter, you should be able to afford a house in this city, an apartment. And that's going to require us building or renovating new buildings, new units, and in order to do that in a way that makes it affordable, we're going to have to provide some subsidy.
I mean, you do see a lot of the city firefighters and police officers living outside the city.
Yep.
They're looking for, good schools that they can afford on their salaries. They want to live in subdivisions. They're looking for really these neighborhoods that they feel like they are priced out of here in the city, yeah. I feel like.
And there shouldn't be a neighborhood in the city of Cincinnati where somebody's priced out. I mean, there's going to be there's always going to be your Hyde Parks and your Mount Lookouts, but most of our neighborhoods have to be neighborhoods where anyone can find a quality, affordable house.
Let me ask you this. It was 2 years ago this week, I believe, that you were elected to your first term on council. So you're almost halfway through your first four-year term. Your first term.
Seems longer.
The first year was, so for those who may not remember as vividly as I do, the first year involved the Harry Black.
I remember.
Issue. It involved the horrible tragedy of Kyle Plush and our need to dramatically overhaul our communications, emergency communication system. It involved FC and what it took to move that project forward and our attempt to make sure it was done as well as it could be in terms of the people who are living in the West End. So it was a lot in that first year. And I think now with a new city manager, Patrick Dehaney, who is he was a combat veteran in both Afghanistan and Iraq, and defused bombs, which means that he is really good at calming the waters when
he's really qualified for the job.
He's really qualified for the job. So that, and you know, he's running
he's
a good city.
Key.
He's low key.
He's low key.
He's running a good city, and you know, we're for the most part all getting along. I mean, I get along with all of my colleagues, and that's something I'm proud of, because I think that's what people expect us to do. But it's also how you get things done. And, you know, so things
have
calmed down pretty dramatically.
That's what I was going to ask you. Just where do you feel good about where you're at this point, almost halfway through the
tournament? Yeah, and there's a lot more we have to get done. I mean, we have to get to a place where we have what I've been calling balanced development, where we are continuing to attract investments, particularly in our neighborhoods, mm-hmm. And doing it in a way that lifts people in those neighborhoods up, that makes it so that they can still live there, that it's affordable, that if there are jobs associated with the new development, that they have an opportunity to compete for those jobs, that those jobs are paying a good wage, so that they can take care of their families. And so we can do more to incentivize better wages and local jobs and minority inclusion and affordable housing. And so I think that's going to be something that the mayor and council come together on. You know, there's a whole host of other things that I think are really at the heart and soul of how to effectively run a city that are going to be really important over the course of the next 2 years. Passing this transit levy, which will include significant investments in infrastructure. I mean, we've got to pave more roads. That is something that people expect. They expect their garbage to be picked up. They expect there to be, you know, real public safety, and they expect us to pave their roads. And we cannot shirk that responsibility. And so passing next year's transit levy, which will include a major investment in infrastructure, which will just be, I think, the first of a few steps to really invest in our infrastructure, is going to be key. So that, I think, getting the city to a place where we are delivering our key services, core services, with excellence, and ensuring that more and more people get to participate, is what is most important.
You're in charge. One more thing I have for you.
It's our favorite subject.
I know
it's coming. Here we go.
It's not really
not
my favorite.
In charge of.
It's not really my favorite subject. I'm pretty tired of talking about it, actually. But I do, just because you're the committee chair.
I have one important question.
You're the committee chair of the major projects committee, which the Cincinnati streetcar falls underneath your committee.
I'm
going to let Sherry go ahead and ask the question.
Okay. Yeah. Fire
is
away.
Is it going to be free?
Yeah. I think it will be. When? I think sooner rather than later, which is,
Christmas. Sooner Christmas?
Maybe. I mean, you know, like so we hired a, you know, person to run the streetcar, which we desperately needed. His name is Travis Jarek, and he's working his tail off. He's got all five cars working. He's making sure that it's safe and more reliable. So it's getting through. He's a heads down work through the problems guy, and I think he's making some headway, no pun intended, but I think you're going to see a new schedule where you'll have more cars when people are using it. So nights and weekends, which I think is very smart. I think he's going to have raised some private money, enough money to say, let's go free. And at the end of the day, we have to try to make this work. And is it there yet? No. Are we in a better place than where we were a year ago? I think we are. And I think that the more you have somebody who spends all day, every day, working through these problems, as Travis is doing, is a good thing. And we did vote to transition it out of Sorda and over to the city so that we can be fully accountable to this thing.
Holy transition it, right?
Holy
transition.
There's
like a whole Twitterverse.
No,
that's
it's
not a whole thing. It is a whole thing.
Yeah, I think starting January 1, everything will be at the city and sort of will have, nothing to do with it. I mean, it will be a city project. And having it under one roof is, as I said last year, terribly important. You can't be successful in running something if it's in multiple places with multiple owners. And now it's under one roof with one owner. And that has and will continue to make a difference. It's not, again, where we want it to be, but it's heading in the right direction.
Oh, that's another transportation pun.
Sorry. I think it's a
huge pun fan.
I know this is going to shock both of you, but I think it's a bad project. and I know that's nothing.
Wait,
new
did we
coming
ask
from
you?
Me.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, you didn't ask me. But you know what? Go. No, this is the point I want to make before we jump out and let Greg go and do his work. You had nothing to do with this project. You were not on city council when all the votes were taken to do it or don't do it. But you've done your job on this, Greg. You were put in charge of this committee to try to fix it. And, you know, it would be the easy thing to do, I think, would have been to say, yeah, you know, politically, you could have just said to hell with it. I didn't have anything to do with it. And you guys fix it. But no, you didn't do that. And I think that says a lot about who you are as an elected official. And
I never get to do this very often, but as you're sitting there explaining it, I'm thinking about my parents. So I'm going to give them a shout out to my mom and my dad. It's how I was raised. I mean, my parents, you know, if something falls in your lap, you work on it. I mean, you know, if it's something that you're supposed to be doing because you were hired to do it, or you were elected to do it, or it's just expected of you, do it. So
the Turcos are everything worth doing is worth overdoing and doing your best on, no matter what it takes.
My father, John Landsman, who, you know, hopefully will listen to this and smile at this point, always would say to me, you know, look, you're not going to be the smartest person in the room. Like, it's not that you're not smart. It's just that, you know, there are going to be times where there's a lot of people who are just smarter. And that was the case for me. But don't let anyone outwork you. I mean, that's been his refrain. And so, you know, you work as hard as you can on everything that you're supposed to. And yeah, hopefully you make as much progress as possible.
Greg, this has been awesome. Thanks for the insight.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. The news and all the best to you as you move forward here toward the end of the year. And we'll look forward to seeing what else you're working on. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks to Greg Landsman for coming in. Really enjoyed that conversation. Sherry, what any final thoughts on that discussion?
You know what? Honestly, I feel like it has been a very long 2 years. There's still two more years to go.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see what this council does next. We are going to be gearing up, of course, for the council race and the mayor's race. And so I think we'll kind of seen some jockeying there, but the big ideas tend to come out at election time.
Yep.
And so I'm looking forward to what the next big thing is.
And I sort of stumbled there because I said he's in his first term. I'm stumbling now. The first of his 4-year terms. Well, he's actually going to be in the last of his 4-year terms because in 2021 is when the council terms drop back to 2 years. Landsman is still eligible to run again. He will not be termed out because he's in his first term. But in terms of being in a 4-year term, this is everyone's last 4-year term.
Right.
So council goes back to 2-year terms starting in with the 2021 election. Anyway, we have plenty of time to talk about 2021. And certainly we're going to talk, let's put 2021 in the past right now. And next week, we're going to kind of do more of an overview and take a look at 2020, because finally, with the 2019 election and heading into the holidays here, we are now in all on 2020 mode. I know probably a lot of you are chuckling because we've already really been in 2020 mode for several months, but certainly we are now full into it. And Sherry and I will take a look break down some of the, I mean, there's a crazy list of intense 2020 races just in Hamilton County locally.
With primaries.
And then you primaries, and you put on top of that Donald Trump being at the top of the ticket, and
we're going to kick it off.
Congressional races, and yeah.
Todd you know, Todd Portoon, we've been talking about him a lot. He did say, you know, he kind of left it open that this would be his last term, but he did say on Thursday, and, you know, a very poignant moment, he came to the commission, you know, by medical transport to vote on the convention center hotel. And he said he's going to have to resign by the end of the year. He's just undergoing very intense chemotherapy for his cancer. And so we're going to see this going to start with who gets his seat.
Yeah. And I can't say enough, but, you know, all the best to Commissioner Portoon. What a true public servant. And as we heard Greg Landsman talk about, he is still working his tail off, even in the midst of just being incredibly sick and dealing with chemo and making it downtown for critical votes. And, you know, doing what he does, and that's serving the public and working his butt off in that job. And so all the best to him. Let's jump over and touch on a little something fun before we get out of here.
I know. I've been hearing Polly talk at her desk. I know you know what she's working on, but I'm like, what kind of assignment does she have? You know, it's not like my assignments.
You know what, Phil? We're gonna key this up as our
So Cincinnati
moment of the week. Brought to you by Cincinnati.com. And it is, drum roll, or whatever we do. Phil's looking at me like he's getting ready to push a button, and I don't know what it is because I forget all the noises that he has.
Uh-huh. I think he prefers it that way because I do typically listen. I do listen to kind of to try and get better at this. And so Phil has some surprises up his sleeves.
Silent Phil was just sitting there smiling at me, ready to push some button. I have no idea what it is. But anyway, our So Cincinnati moment of the week is Polly is doing a review. Our food critic and reviewer, Polly Campbell. I don't think she needs any introduction.
Agreed.
We've had her on the podcast many times. And judging by the numbers on those podcast episodes, you guys love her. She's on Friday, Cincinnati.com, going to be posting her review of Cincinnati chili. This is not her picking her favorite overall, but it's going to be her giving her take on all the different chilies throughout the city, Skylines and Gold Stars and Price Hill chilies and all the little mom and pop chili parlors around this great region. I am so excited about this.
I know, because I feel like she's going to make another bucket list of like the best of the chili parlors.
She's not going to tell you what her favorite is, but I'll tell you what mine is, and it's Price Hill Chili. I had it for lunch today as we record here on Tuesday.
Always. It's always great to go in there.
Goodness, that place is great. I love it. Shout out to Steve, the owner, and all the folks at Price Hill Chili. It's top notch. You don't like chili, do you?
I tend not to eat it. I do like it, though. It was an acquired taste for me, not being from here. I do like it. You know, it seems to be a very good late night snack sometimes.
I don't know. I eat it for lunch. I eat it for dinner. I eat it late at night sometimes. As my as our former
Jack co- Jack loves it. They basically know us by name in the Delhi skyline, and his order involves like a blue and red icy mixed with all of his chili things. We support it 100%, even if I don't eat it all the time.
I support the Wyoming skyline, and I also support the Hartwell Gold Star, two places I frequent quite often.
Equal opportunity.
I'm disappointed. All right. I'm disappointed you don't like chili, though. It's not so Cincinnati.
I know. I have to work on that. So maybe I deserve that. I love Geta. So it took me a little bit of time on that, too. But
I hell,
love
you love Geta, but you don't like the Cincinnati style chili? You know who does love Cincinnati chili?
Who?
A Cincinnatian through and through. Bro Love, executive editor of the Cincinnati Inquirer, Cincinnati.com. There it is. I wanted to hear it, and Phil was paying attention. Let's give another one to Burl. Excellent, Phil.
I will take Polly's list to heart, and let me see what I can do about all of this.
Ultimately, folks, check out Polly's. She's calling it what she told me to use the word survey of Cincinnati style chili. So check that out on Friday on Cincinnati.com. Keyword search chili, I would assume. Anyway, thanks again to Greg Landsman. Thanks to my partner and pal, Sherry Coolidge, my other partner and pal, Silent Phil. We'll talk at you next week.